Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as always, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
The stars at night shine big and bright. So this is going to be part two. It was almost part one of the history of Texas Instrument, but thank goodness for the undo button because our producer deleted our first episode.
And then undeleted it.
Yes. But we have to share that because we must shame him.
That and we're still calming down. The breathing is returning to normal.
Like, oh, we don't have to redo that. Okay. All right, so yes, part two of the history of Texas Instruments. Now, you may remember that in our last episode.
In the last episode of Tech Stuff.
We left off where Texas Instruments had gone into space. I think it was 1958.
Yeah, around the time also when Jack Kilby, who was forced to work while everyone else was taking a break because he hadn't been with the company very long and hadn't accrued vacation time, just fooling around the office and decided to come up with the integrated circuit. No big deal. Just something he did on everyone else's vacation.
Sure, you guys, you all go to Hawaii. I'm going to make an integrated circuit. Get more awards than all of you put together.
And he did.
Yes. Except he didn't sound
Like
maybe
that. Not put together. No, he didn't. He didn't. He doesn't seem like the kind of person who would do that.
No.
But in 1959, TI came out with the first commercial integrated circuit. Basically, you know, it commercialized the product.
Right. The 1958 one was clearly just a prototype.
Mm-hmm.
Just as the transistor that Bell Labs made, like a decade earlier, was just a prototype.
Yeah.
Actually, more than a decade earlier. But yes.
So they're starting to come on the market. And again, something we talked about not too terribly long ago on Tech Stuff and something we have a nifty neato article about. The first gallium arsenide solar cells were produced.
Mm-hmm.
This is a period of intense development. Again, we're talking post-war United States. There's a lot going on in industry.
The space race is starting to gear up.
Yep. Yep. And there's a lot going on. The company is, we were talking about Mr. Haggerty, who had been a lieutenant in the United States military, mm-hmm. Who came on board after, working with the company as a manager for procurement.
Yes.
Came on board and joined Texas Instruments. He ended up being one of the company's very important leaders, and he, came up with the objective strategies and tactics approach. This is basically the kind of, finding ways to get the semiconductor technology that they had developed into all kinds of electronics and computing products. There were companies in Japan taking advantage of it. You might have heard of a couple of these guys. Mm. Mitsubishi, Sony, Canon, IBM Japan, and Furukawa, which was the parent company of Fujitsu. And basically, TI became a supplier for these companies during this period in the early 1960s. They talked about the possibility in January of 1964, working with the Japanese government, of coming up with a subsidiary of TI based in Japan itself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It took them a little while, but they worked that out. In the 1960s, this is when TI was an industry leader in semiconductors and circuits. They were supplying companies all over the world, and they were developing international subsidiaries.
Yeah, at that point, again, you wouldn't necessarily be owning a product that says Texas Instruments. You would be owning products that had lots of Texas Instruments components inside them.
Yeah.
Because apart from the transistor radio, mm-hmm. That really helped Texas Instrument get a foothold in this industry. I mean, that demonstrated the power of the transistor. Apart from that, they really had not invested in the consumer electronics market at all. That just wasn't their focus. They were focused on corporate electronics.
Yeah, so they're
electronic components.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. They're a B2B, if you will.
Yeah.
With, business to business. So they are an OEM manufacturer. They give the parts to the guys who make the other stuff that you buy off the shelf.
Right. They make the other stuff possible.
Yes. No, that's BASF.
Oh, okay.
But actually, BASF does that kind of thing too. So, they really do. Well, I mean, that's their thing.
Okay.
So, where are you on your timeline?
1967 is about where I'm at.
Okay.
So in 1967, Texas Instruments went and invented the first handheld calculator.
Yeah, if you haven't ever been to TI's website, TI.com, you really should go and check out the interactive timeline, because that's where I've gotten a lot of my information. But they actually have a picture of this thing. It looks like, if you've ever seen the old style keyboard with a detachable number pad.
Yeah.
This sucker is huge.
It is pretty enormous, but still is small compared to the calculating and adding machines that were popular at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And you got to remember that. Before the integrated circuit and before the transistor, calculators were all mechanical devices.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. These were mechanically based calculators. And so the transistor and the integrated circuit really led to the electric calculator. So in 1967, Texas Instruments, they demonstrate the first handheld calculator. It's not meant for consumers yet. This was really, again, another prototype. And it was able to do addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division, and that's it.
Ooh.
And it had 18 keys at a visual output that displayed up to 12 decimal lights.
What?
Yeah, 12 decimal digits, all the way up to that.
Which, when you think about it, at that time,
was revolutionary.
Extremely impressive.
Yeah, I mean, this is...
jokes aside.
In a way, this is the beginning of the electronic computer industry as well. I mean, there are other developments going on in various other companies all at the same time, but this is leading the way to the consumer computer market. Developments like this really were very instrumental in that. Now, in 1971...
Oh,
you have some more information between 67 and 71?
Just a bit of an aside just a tiny bit. Jack Kilby received the 1969 National Medal of Science from President Richard M. Nixon on February 16th, 1970.
Yeah.
So just a note, I tracked the Jack Kilby Express when I was going through
this. Nice. Well, in 1971, Texas Instruments develops the single-chip microcomputer for calculators, which means that they've now reduced the circuitry, the size of the circuitry. The miniaturization process has gotten to the point where they can put everything that a calculator needs to be able to perform calculating functions on a single chip. Mm-hmm. Now, this coincides with this is like a demonstration of what Gordon Moore had said just a few years ago. Now, Gordon Moore, as you may remember, was one of the co-founders of Intel.
Yes.
And he had come up with this observation that we now call Moore's Law, but truly it is an observation, that the number of discrete elements on a given sized chip of silicon will double every 12 to 24 months. The actual number varies depending on when you look at Moore's Law, but in general now we say every 2 years that the number of elements on a chip will double. So that means, in effect, that not only are they becoming twice as complex every 2 years, but twice as powerful. They're
yes.
able to do twice as much as the ones from 2 years previous. So this is really kind of the single chip microcomputer for calculators is kind of a demonstration for that. Just 2 years previously, it would have taken a chip twice the size or two chips to be able to do what they could fit on one chip in 1971. So we're actually seeing Moore's Law play out in the market. It's showing to be a true observation.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is pretty interesting. Now, it wouldn't be until 1972 that Texas Instruments would introduce its own calculator to the marketplace. Up to that point, what Texas Instruments was doing was just what we've been saying all the time. They've been supplying elements to other manufacturers. But in 72, they decided to get into the consumer marketplace with the TI-2500, which is not a Terminator. It is the Data Math Calculator, which cost $149.95 as its retail price. And so this was the first consumer electronics piece that Texas Instruments had really gone for since the radio. And this one actually looks pretty clunky, too, if you ever take a look at it.
Yeah, it's big. It has that 2001 rounded, spacey-looking look to it.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, characteristic of what the space age will look like when you're in 1972.
Right, right. It's very kind of modular almost. Like you're looking at like, this would fit aboard the space station in 2001.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Hal could do your taxes on it.
Hal could do your taxes. I'm afraid I can't give you a write-off on that, Dave.
I'm afraid I'm not a dependent, Dave.
So, my next date is in 1975.
Would that be for the SR-52?
Actually,
because that's also 75.
When Jack Kilby got the VK Zworykin Award from the National Academy of Engineering.
So you definitely have the Jack Kilby Award timeline.
Oh yeah,
okay.
I've got it.
All right. Well, we'll just keep going with that.
Well, I mean, it's sort of a funny aside for me and apparently Jonathan, but it also shows how important the IC was.
You know, Jack Kilby's family crest is a barracuda eating Neil Armstrong.
Why do you do this? Okay, so yeah, that was in 1975, and also the thing that Jonathan said.
Yes, the thing that Jonathan said. Why I
yes,
oughta.
The SR-52
scientific
calculator.
Yes, a programmable calculator. It had magnetic card storage, which meant that you could actually program stuff on the calculator in order to do scientific calculations, which that was revolutionary as well. And it was, again, Texas Instruments' own product. So this is another consumer product. It used the algebraic operating system, which was developed by Texas Instruments itself. And it came with 22 program cards, and it cost just a few bucks short of $400.
Yeah. Yeah. $395 had those program cards. I'm not sure. It said the TI site says non-volatile. So I'm thinking that you couldn't do a lot of, you know, programming and storage.
I think it means that you couldn't make them explode.
Okay. So.
And they also in 75 began to make another consumer product, which other companies were working on as well. And also it featured in the works of a Mr. Douglas Adams.
Ah, yes.
Digital watches.
Yes. Beep.
Yes.
Stuff what beeps. episode 407.
Yeah, the digital watches, of course, were those were several companies were making digital watches at that point. Again, we've reached a point now where the integrated circuit has reached a level of miniaturization where you could use some tiny circuits in a watch and replace the old analog watches with digital ones. Now, most digital watches at that time were $100 or more, maybe $150 or more. So Texas Instruments decided to try and aim for a lower price market. Mm-hmm. So most of their digital watches were priced at $40 or less. So that helped them get a jump on that particular segment. Because there were plenty of people who thought digital watches were pretty cool, mm-hmm. including Douglas Adams, but they just couldn't afford them.
Yeah, a couple things that we skipped because my notes are frenetic. They have lots and lots of things in them.
Yeah.
1973, TI founder Eugene McDermott passed away.
Yes.
And 1974, there was a new program that TI established in the company called IDEA. And yes. Basically, it was an R&D group where they wanted to see the idea was that if an idea came through IDEA, that managers were authorized to go ahead and give it the green light.
Right.
You know, oh, dude, that's really cool. Go with it.
And a lot of the educational materials that TI produced later on were products of this particular group project.
Yes, one of Jonathan's favorites, which will come up in a minute. That's why I wanted to set the stage, because one of the things that they were working on was a speech synthesizer.
Yes, which does come into play in just a second.
Uh-huh. So I just wanted to make sure that we covered that real
good
quick
idea.
Before we get into a couple of Jonathan's favorites.
Yeah, I actually, the next two products I have to talk about, I owned as a kid. All right, this dates me somewhat.
And I didn't.
I thought
they were cool, but I didn't have one.
In 1976, Texas Instruments introduced the Little Professor.
Ah, yes.
Which looks like a calculator with a little owl-like visage on the calculator, and
plus he's
wearing a miter board.
Yeah, he's He's got one on the top of his head where actually the black part of the calculator that's supposed to be the his mortarboard.
Yeah.
Is where the readout is.
Yeah, so and it was actually not just a calculator, but it was a learning device.
Mm-hmm.
It was to teach you how to perform mathematical operations. And I owned one of these. I actually used one of these to learn how to do basic mathematic operations. And I have fond memories of this device, because I was a geek. Mm-hmm. Even as a little kid, I was a geek, and I found learning to be fun. And I've always found learning to be fun, which is coincidentally why I love my job here. So I have,
it's not
I
coincidental.
Have, I have, ironically, is why I enjoy my, in an Alanis Morissette way, it's ironic that I enjoy my job.
Yeah.
No, TI, I have TI to thank a lot for some of these devices because they were instrumental in my learning process. So the Little Professor was definitely one of the ones I owned. And I also owned the other one I was going to talk about that was introduced in 1978. Development had been going on for several years before that. But in 78, it hit the market. And it was the Speak and Spell.
Mm-hmm.
And Speak and Spell also was very important in the documentary film Toy Story, as I recall.
Also, it can give you an idea when you need to phone home.
Yes. Also important in the documentary E.T. the Extraterrestrial.
But yeah, this is part of the IDEA program.
Yeah. And it had the synthetic speech incorporated into it where the toy would say something and you would be asked to spell it. And it was a way of learning how to read and to spell. And I remember having one of these. And I think a couple of kids in my neighborhood had them. And yeah. I enjoyed using one of these as well. I mean, again, thank you, TI. And in fact, the next product I have to talk about, I own that too.
Would this be the TI 99 Stroke 4?
Yes.
Slash 4?
Actually, it'd be Slash 4A for me, but which technically didn't come out until 1981. But in 1979, TI decided to enter the personal computing market. And at that point, there were very few other personal computers on the market. This is the earliest days of the personal computer age.
Yeah, you could have seen one of these if you were at CES in June 1979.
Yeah,
of course, I was only 8 years old at that point. So
yeah, I was I was busy awaiting. I couldn't go because I was spending all my time eagerly awaiting The Empire Strikes Back, which wouldn't come out until 1980.
Hey, but it was only $1,150.
Yes, that was one of the reasons why we had the TI-99/4A, because that one was slashed to $525. But this was a computer which doesn't really resemble the way we think of computers right now. If you were to buy just the very basic set, like if you had just the base unit, it looked like a keyboard. That on the right hand side had a big cartridge slot that was in there, and you would slide the cartridges in horizontally, not vertically. They didn't stick out; they didn't stick up.
Not like an Atari,
right? Not like an Atari
2600.
More like a Nintendo, but there was no cover that came down over the cartridge, and you would plug this into a monitor or television. We had ours plugged into our TV, and this is the computer system where I played Hunt the Wumpus. I've talked about Hunt the Wumpus a lot. There are certain things in your childhood that stick with you, and Hunt the Wumpus stuck with me. I was terrible at that game. I hated it, but I played it a lot because it's what I owned. So anyway, the Texas Instrument computer, that's one of those computers that you hear a lot of engineers talk about, how, you know, they cut their teeth, sometimes literally, on the Texas Instruments TI-99. And it was pretty revolutionary. The price tag definitely kind of hurt the sales for the first couple of years, which is why TI went back and started to make some changes to the device, and then released the new model at $525.
Yeah, except it wasn't all sunshine and roses for this one.
No,
either
there was a manufacturing problem that led to disastrous results for TI.
Yeah, and I actually wasn't aware of this until I did the research, because I guess I never had a TI-99. But apparently there was a manufacturing problem that could cause people under certain circumstances to get an electric shock when using the computer.
Which, you know, you don't want.
Well, standing in a bucket of water is not the ideal situation for you to use your computer anyway.
Well, I'm pretty sure that in this case it would take a little more than that.
It was actually the power supply. And was the power supply, since I didn't have one of these, was the power supply external on this computer?
I honestly can't remember.
Okay.
I
just curious.
You know, I honestly do not remember. I remember using this device, but I remember my memory is firmly of me sitting on the floor of our living room with this device plugged into a television set and playing Hunt the Wumpus. Beyond that, can't help you.
Yeah, they did TI had to recall all these devices and send out new ones. So they were off the shelves for a while. That never helps.
Well, especially during this era, you got to remember Apple is tearing it up with the Apple II.
That's true.
The Apple I was not a huge commercial success. That was mainly a curiosity for hobbyists.
Yeah.
And it was sold. Do you remember how much the Apple I was sold for?
Yes, I do.
$666.66. So, at this point, the Apple II is on the market, and that's really tearing it up in the home marketplace. So, TI being off the shelves, it was definitely a big blow to the company, because they were losing ground rapidly to Apple.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then, of course, later on, you had the IBM compatible computers really taking off, and at that point, TI was sort of left behind as far as the personal computer age is concerned.
Mm-hmm. Ah, so what's next?
Well, the next one I have is an 81.
The next one you have is an 81.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you have anything before that, or should I just launch into it?
Well, I'm catching up on my notes. Pat Haggerty passed away in 1980. Mm. So the old guard, the people who started the company, are starting to
pass away.
To pass on.
Yeah.
I have one in 1982.
Okay. Well, in 81, the first solar-powered calculator launches.
Yes. The TI-1766.
Which is pretty cool.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a Texas Instruments solar-powered calculator, too. It almost sounds like, when I look back on my childhood, that I was like a Texas Instruments fanboy without knowing it.
Yeah. You know, one thing that's missing from their interactive timeline that I think is odd.
What's that?
The TI-30.
Yeah.
It isn't showing up, which I think is odd that they don't see it as a big deal. We had a TI-30. I wasn't allowed to mess with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, they had, you know, these
devices. You might want to explain to our listeners what a TI-30 is.
TI-30 was, in my opinion, the calculator that kind of really made a dent in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. It was ubiquitous for a while there, I think. And derivations of the TI-30, we have a couple around my house now, which are later model, you know, more sophisticated, solar powered. This thing, though, had the red LEDs mm-hmm. for the display. So it's not, you know, I think of calculators today as having, you know, LCD black and white displays.
And
you
of
know,
course, people should know or that your the TI-30 would eventually evolve into Cylons.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought those were toasters.
Well, it was actually a terrible, terrible, tragic love story between a TI-30 and a toaster.
Okay. All right, then.
So moving on, you said you had something for 1982?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I did. In 1982, Jack Kilby was inaugurated into the Inventors Hall of Fame. I'm telling you, it was a big deal. And like I said, it's a joke because he's continuously getting honors.
You know,
it's
Jack
not the last
Kilby
one.
Doesn't do push-ups. He pushes the earth down.
It was a big deal. At this point, integrated circuits are in so many different kinds of things,
yes.
from inventions all around the world, from companies all around the world. He revolutionized electronics.
Well, yeah, again, so basics of computing and electronics.
It's a running gag in this episode, but it's amazing. And he is being honored by people of all stripes of engineering and electronics. So that is a positive thing. So I really don't mean to make light of this.
So the next thing I have is actually the date of October 28th, 1983.
Okay.
This is when TI officially announced it was withdrawing from the home computer market.
Yes.
And so it looks like once it's all said and done, it looked like TI lost over $500 million
yeah.
due to the TI-99 problems, which included all the different various drains on their income. So that was a pretty spectacular failure.
Yeah, but you know, I would argue that it was one of those failures that wasn't ultimately a failure.
Well, and certainly, like I said, there are so many computer scientists out there who will talk about owning a TI-99
yeah.
as mm-hmm. as their first machine and how that really got them into computing. So in a way, even though financially it was not a success, it was one of the most influential pieces of consumer hardware to hit the market.
Yeah.
I mean, without that, we might not have had some of the great computer scientists who have come out since then, who have really kind of shaped the way we use computers. Things like everything from the way computers network to the sounds computers make. I mean, there's some mm-hmm. pretty spectacular stories that come out of people who credit the TI-99 with their interest in the field.
Mm-hmm. So my next date is 1986, mm-hmm. when Jack Kilby got the IEEE Medal of Honor. And let's see, there are some pretty big things that happened. I mean, a lot of the things that happened to TI in the 1980s are sort of behind the scenes for most of us. Things like stock splits and, you know, moving, branching out and establishing branches around the world. It did in 1988 get rid of its 60% interest in GSI. Just an mm-hmm. interesting note. The geophysical origins of the company now, you know, the company is letting go of that.
Yep.
And let's see. So we're moving into the 90s, I think.
Yeah, and at this point, you know, the consumer technology is starting to wind down a little bit. They still make plenty of calculators,
I was going to say in the late 80s and 90s, they had those really awesome graphing calculators,
yeah, yeah.
which were huge and extremely – I mean huge as in this was a big deal. And in the late 80s, I was in high school when I was starting to take, physics and chemistry and calculus. And, you know, I was really jealous of all these people who had these graphing calculators. Of course, at that point, we weren't allowed to use them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause, you know, that was cheating.
Things like the TI-81. And
now
the
TI-85. You have to have them.
Yeah. Yeah. These were big deals. I mean, I remember seeing them too. I think I actually did have a graphing calculator at one point. We did have to have one, and that was a big deal because they were They were not the cheapest electronics out there on the market.
No, they were expensive, but you know they were very sophisticated, especially again for their time.
So, most of TI's consumer products at this point are really in the educational field.
Yeah, a lot of them certainly are, or at least the stuff that people actually see.
Yeah.
Again, they're doing all kinds of things in the background. They got rid of their Unix business and their industrial systems in 1992. They actually got out of a lot of business in the 90s.
Yeah.
Basically, they're finding that all the things that they were working on over the years that just weren't working out for them anymore. They just sort of gradually sloughed off.
Yeah, they felt that it was pulling focus from their core competencies.
Yeah. 1993, Jack Kilby won the Kyoto Prize in Advanced Technology. Yeah. And Eric Johnson in 1995 passed on.
Mm-hmm.
That was when TI in 1995 launched TI.com.
Oh.
So they were, and that was kind of early for the internet days.
Yeah, yeah. When you think that the World Wide Web really didn't start until about 92. Mm-hmm. The internet had been around for a while, but the ability for the average person to access the internet in any way beyond email or other like basic internet commands, that was really limited until the World Wide Web.
Mm-hmm. In 96, they got rid of their printer business. In 97, they got rid of a whole lot of stuff. They got out of the defense business. They got rid of software, telecommunications, just all kinds of stuff that they said, you know what, we're going to focus on other things, and that's not part of it.
Yeah. And they continued to do that over the next couple of years. They were acquiring some companies and then they were divesting themselves of others.
Well, they got rid of, in 1995, they got rid of their electronic toy business. Tiger Electronics bought that.
Yep.
So, it's funny because I think of TI in those 1980s terms because that's really when I became aware of them.
Yeah.
My father actually is mechanical engineer, worked with some of TI's programmable calculators. And there are a couple units that he had that are still around my dad's house that you actually had to pull out a section of the calculator and snap in a cartridge. And then you could lock it down with a key to this ginormous printer. And the work you would do would print out on a piece of, on a roll of tape, very much like a, cash register might.
Mm-hmm.
This was back in the late 1980s. So they were still, pretty involved in these other things, but these are not things that people would buy and have in their homes. These
right.
are things that you would have for business.
Right. And then in the late 90s and early 2000 era, they started to experiment with various sensor and control divisions, some of which they acquired only to sell off later. It's kind of like this era of them testing out the other parts of the other industry interests to see if that would be a good investment for the company. And then some of them they kept and some of them they realized were not really aligned with the company vision.
Mm-hmm. They did ship their 20 millionth graphing calculator in 2000.
Yeah, why don't you talk about what happened to Kilby in 2000?
That was just a really small prize.
Yeah.
The Nobel Prize in Physics.
Yeah.
He got that in 2000.
Yep.
So, Mr. Kilby is known for his pioneering work in integrated circuits. Just
right.
amazing how much the world has embraced, his work.
In 2003, Cecil Green, one of the original founders, passes away.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
I believe that's all the founders at that point.
He was 103.
Yeah.
Or 102 and a half.
Yeah, that's... When you get to that age, do you go with the halves?
Yeah, I'm just being technical.
Okay. So we're winding up to getting close to the modern day now and what Texas Instruments is into. They're still very much involved in semiconductors and transistors.
We haven't really even gotten into the digital signal processing stuff. They were
right.
in the first 3COM 56K modems in the
mm-hmm,
mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
They're a DLP, the digital light processing technology. Which is in many, many TV sets. They worked with Fujitsu on all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Regarding that. And one of Jonathan's favorite movies of all times, and my low battery is telling me I should shut down my computer. one of Jonathan's favorite movies, Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace showed on DLP.
That was a terrible documentary.
But yeah, I mean, again, you know, that, of course, that movie was heralded as being digital. Oh boy, was it digital. Boy, yeah. Howdy, was it digital. You know, and they used TI technology to show it off in theaters.
Getting a bad feeling about this.
Oh man. So I mean, yeah, TI has faded from the public eye in a lot of areas.
Yeah.
There goes the computer. Should have brought the power supply.
But it's still very much active behind the scenes. Like you're still going. And of course, if you are a student, then you're probably familiar with TI calculators because mm-hmm. they still are very much the standard for those as well.
And you're very likely to have TI chips in pretty much all kinds of technology that you may be carrying in your on your person at a given time, yeah, or in the TV.
I think TI is only second to Qualcomm for chips in mobile handsets.
Yeah.
So there are quite a few handsets that use some sort of TI chip. In fact, if you look at the breakdown of any electronics device, there is a good chance you're going to find at least one chip in that device that is going to be branded by Texas Instruments.
Yeah. So whereas I think
and
a lot
we're talking Texas, they really do brand them.
Yes.
Yeah. It takes a very tiny little fire.
Yeah. No, I think that maybe people, since they don't see Texas Instruments computers anymore and they don't see, you know, there were toys and all kinds of things that really got a lot of public attention. Mm-hmm. You might have thought the company is gone. But absolutely not. They just have really returned to their B2B OEM roots.
Yeah.
Where they are supplying parts to other people who make stuff.
And who knows, maybe we'll get to a point where it's a full cycle and they'll go to just looking for oil.
That's entirely possible.
And then it'll start all over again. Well, that I think brings us up to speed, and that wraps up our history of Texas Instruments. I was actually really interested in this. I mean, I had been familiar with the company mainly through its consumer products because that was during my childhood.
Yeah, mine
so
too.
That's where I knew the company from. Whereas really what they're famous for is revolutionizing the electronics industry. So what do I know?
That's all.
Yeah. Oh, that. So again, if you guys have any suggestions for other companies you'd like us to take a close look at and kind of give a breakdown of what they've done and what it means to the technology industries as a whole, let us know. You can drop us a line on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle there is TechStuff, HSW. Or you can send us an email, and that address is TechStuff@HowStuffWorks.com. And Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.